Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 199 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling Jim Jesernick Reminisces on a Rewarding Washington Career and Assesses Agriculture's Uncertain Future. 2. This continues last week's episode, during which Jesernick provided a prelude to how he really feels about King County. So glad I live on the east side of the state. King County may be insane, his words, not mine, but as Jesernick points out, it is also the key to the state's political power. Meanwhile, groups that he labels as extremist environmentalists are setting the agenda when it comes to forest health and preventing much of what is needed to keep forests healthy and unburned, including cattle grazing. Jesernick held a handful of job titles over his career: lawyer, legislator, ag director, and lobbyist. Today, however, his primary designations are husband and father. Well, retiree fits too. Because of that, some might suggest Jesernick is a has-been and should keep his thoughts to himself. Me, I think more opportunity should be made for men and women to look back and recall the mistakes and successes of their careers, because it is in surmounting the challenges that wisdom comes from. Besides, as you'll hear ahead, Jesernick has strategies for agriculture to consider as it moves further into the 21st century. What will the ag issues be in the next 30 years? In Jesernick's estimation, they're bound to sound familiar. Jesernick served in the Washington House and Senate as a Democrat. He ran for Congress as a Democrat. Finally, he was appointed and reappointed ag director by two Democratic governors. And yet, for the last 20 years, he's worked quite well with the agricultural community, which skews Republican. So I wanted to know, is he still a Democrat?
The answer is no. I'm a born-again nonpartisan. You used to have a lot of moderate to conservative Democrats, and the guy that I actually most liked growing up was Henry Jackson. I thought he was an excellent role model, and so that's why I signed up on the D side. It was nothing any more deeper than that. I just kind of liked Henry Jackson, and I said, well, he's a D. Okay, well, I guess I am too. You know, and one of the questions was, has it been because you've been working so much with ag? It is not so much that as the fact that the Democratic Party has drifted so far left and the Republican Party has drifted so far right. I really don't put my stock in either party, to be honest with you. We'll go down and find different issues. And what's happened is you have lost the middle ground where you're going to have to come up with things that can actually work. Because now it's we win, you lose. And I don't find that as being something that we can sustain long term.
But people like you aren't running for Congress.
They wouldn't win. They couldn't win. That's the problem. You take a look at all of the moderates. When I was an ag director, one of the funniest guys that I ever knew was the director of ag, or secretary of ag down in Texas, Jim Hightower. And if you've got some time, look up a book and get it and read it. It's called The Only Thing in the Middle of the Road is Yellow Stripes and Dead Armadillos. And Jim Hightower was a stand-up comic, as one of the other things that he did. But his book basically said, and this was back, I think he wrote it 89, 88, maybe 90, something like that. He said that the trajectory we're on, the middle of the road, moderate Republican, moderate Democrats will be extinct. They're going to be the dead armadillos in the middle of the road because the far left is going to be beholden to all of the extremist socialist garbage that they're going down. And the far right is going to be beholden to the extreme far right garbage they're going down. And what will happen is the districts and the people that are nominated that are in the middle cannot defeat. You know, a moderate Republican can't defeat a conservative Republican in the primary. A moderate Democrat can't defeat a liberal Democrat in the primary. And so the primaries become where the game is. So, unfortunately, you know, I told him I thought he was crazy, but in retrospect, that's unfortunately where we're at. your moderate, you know, you wouldn't have a Dan Evans, you wouldn't have a Sid Morrison, you wouldn't have a Norm Dix, you wouldn't have a Henry Jackson. They wouldn't get elected today.
Yes, very sad, very sad. Well, one of the things that is motivating Republicans a lot is regulations. My question is, how do you know when regulations cross the line and instead of protecting the public, serve as cudgels and cash boxes against industry?
Well, I mean, I don't know about cudgels or cash boxes against industry. It's more to me, when we were looking at actually the regulations, is you've got to say, is there a problem to start with? And then you got to, a lot of times, you really don't have a problem. You have a one-off anecdotal problem. And you don't need an entire regulatory scheme to fix that. Okay, so for instance, you had in Washington State just recently, you had the tree fruit industry really not taking care of business on the packing side for COVID. And what was then put in place was these across-the-board ag things that when you looked at them in the context of the wheat industry, they were nuts. You know, having a, you know, water station within 200 feet of everybody, that kind of thing. And you're saying, man, I've been out on a tractor before, and you're like, you know, 10 miles, 15 miles from anybody. So one of the things that you got to do is you got to say, what is the problem? Then actually there is a part of the rulemaking process, if it's actually treated correctly, there's the cost-benefit analysis, or CBA, that you can then say, what's the cost of this? What's the benefit? Does it fix the problem? So if you actually follow rigorously the rulemaking process, at least in the state of Washington, the Administrative Procedures Act, you can come up with regulations that work. Unfortunately, what's driving regulations and has driven regulations for the last 20 years that I've had to work mostly as a lobbyist have been politics have driven it. And so you have stuff like this, okay, because we had a problem with the hit farm workers in the tree fruit packing industry, we're going to do a blanket on everybody that stifles everyone. And that was pushed by politics. That wasn't driven by the science behind what made sense for the given industry.
Jim, we're currently in the midst of, in the entire West Coast, seemingly on fire. Many have attributed increasingly bad fire seasons to global warming, an issue farmers are reluctant to embrace. What about you?
Well, I think it's a lot more complicated than that. A couple of different things. A lot of these wildfires are driven by piss poor forest management and range management actions that have been driven by the environmentalists. Let's be real honest with you. Grazing has been shown to make a big difference in keeping wildfires under control in a way that makes sense. You can't overgraze, but everything that's been pushed by the environmental people have been to push the cattle folks off of public land, whether it's wolves or just we don't want you out there. So a lot of what you've got is very bad forest management. We had a couple of different pine beetles that the environmentalists stopped the spraying of those, and what happened was it killed swaths of these pine trees, which then became tinderboxes for the fire. So there is a huge part of the wildfires on the West Coast that are driven by liberal environmental agendas, and that's what caused them. And that, since that's not politically correct for people to talk about, you don't hear it. But I think at least 35 to 40% of the problem is that, if not more. And so that's one part of it. Second part of it is, you know, whether or not you have global warming going on and whether or not you're having that driven by human factors, what I see as being dishonest is saying, okay, therefore, what we're going to do is put a carbon tax in place in the state of Washington. That's what's going to fix the problem. That is not honest. Because it will not fix the problem if there is a problem. You've got worldwide carbon emissions. You've got other CO2 gases that are out there, whether it's methane or others, that dwarf anything Washington State could do. So one of the things that I think is frustrating to me, at least, Arne, was when I was actually lobbying, was the fact that people were then jumping from, okay, you got a global warming problem, therefore we are going to gut shoot cement manufacturing in the state of Washington. That's a feel-good, left-wing environmentalist push. That is not based on science. Washington State's like 0.00003% of worldwide carbon production because, and actually the whole Pacific Northwest, because our energy, electricity mostly comes from a hydropower system that the environmental community wants to dismantle. So I really think the problem here is we've got a bunch of extremist environmental groups that have got to look in the mirror and start aligning what are there. So if they're going to be anti-nuclear, anti-hydro, how are you then not going to deal with it? So we're going to do energy programs and have rolling blackouts? Not on my watch, you're not. So if you're going to come up with a mess like California's got in your energy policy because you're going to say, okay, solar and wind are going to fix it all, then that's just plain irresponsible. And so the combination of forest and range management things pushed by the left-wing environmental groups and also the energy policies pushed by them, to me, are both dishonest. And then to say, suddenly, we've got to do some insignificant thing that gut shoots an entire industry and puts a bunch of people out of work just because then we can say we, quote, did something, that's irresponsible as well.
So, Jim, agriculture has in the past often formed the circular firing squad, and I see something like that happening now with regard to irrigators suggesting that two of the Snake River dams could be breached. Isn't this proposal a slippery slope?
Well, it's just a stupid thing by the Columbia Snake River irrigators that they never should have put out there. That's it. I mean, they're just trying, it's irresponsible is what it is. It's somehow trying to cut a deal to fix what they think their problem is at the expense of everybody else. It's not based on anything around any kind of science. So I see them as an outlier. I don't see them as part of the mainstream ag groups that are actually trying to make things work. And actually, the biggest degree, starting about 20 years ago when they started to do an ag summit, I think actually Washington agriculture does work together better than they ever did back in the 80s, you know, when I first kind of saw the politics of agriculture, because I think every one of them has a understanding that they are not big enough alone to move the needle. Now, I don't know if that'll stay together or not, but at least in the last 10 or 15 years that I was working as a lobbyist, you had everybody pulling together, and if there was a degree of disagreement, so probably one of the big disagreements is a issue that you may not even know about called brand identification in the cattle industry, really split that industry and the dairy industry up. They had that little fight, but on the bigger issues that they were working on, they did a good job, I think, of patching it over and actually being able to work together. So, agriculture is a tiny part of this state from a political perspective now. You know, after this next census, half of the votes in the legislature are going to be in King County alone. And you're going to have, you know, instead of like way back in the day when you had 30 districts in western Washington and 19 in eastern Washington, you're going to be down to, I think, 39 to 10. So there's not going to really be an ability to have much fighting because you're going to have to deal with King County and the politics driving insane policies that I think is going to come out of that.
And so what is your advice to agriculture now that you're retired?
I would expand the coalition building with the timber industry and with natural resource industries around the state. Kind of funny because King and Pierce County are right next to each other, but they are completely different worlds. Pierce County can be a very rational county to work with, and the folks in there are rational folks to work with on ag issues, timber issues, basically natural resource issues. Same can be said a lot about Snohomish County. Now, King County's insane. I mean, let's just be blunt about it. They don't care what the impact is to the rest of the state most of the time. They just want to be politically correct with their donors. And so that's going to be a problem for a long term. But if you can build a country mice, city mice coalition that covers the other parts of the state, you have an ability to continue to work. So I would say expand your coalitions. Second piece, and this is something that Chris Lloyd has been working really hard on out with the Potato Commission for some time, is get the conversation to be about food, not agriculture. And not your little cabbage patch organic garden in Ballard, but how do you feed, you know, 7-8 million people 24/7, you know, three meals a day? How do you do that? And here's what it takes to do it, and really work on educating people. Because once people understand that the actual food chain is at risk with a bunch of the insane policies that come out, then they start to say, well, maybe that's something we don't want to do. So I think the combination of building the coalition as broad and as deep as you can in the rest of the state, and then also following up what Chris has been working real hard, and Michelle Hennings has been working real hard on it with Chris as part of the Washington Grown stuff, is to have the conversation be about real food production. And hopefully you can make some inroads. We'll see.
Is the wheat industry in a particularly perilous position because we export 80 to 90% of our product?
Well, I think it is. You don't have the same argument, but across the board, you know, tree fruit exports out of the state 90% of its product too. You're still feeding people. You know, if you're looking at someone and they say, well, we don't care if you feed somebody in Japan. I say, well, that's, you know, or Malaysia or someplace. I say, that's pretty arrogant of you to say that. So I can fight someone who says, well, I don't care if somebody doesn't get fed in Yemen. Well, we do. And that's an important part about trying to stay together as agriculture and the food production systems that are out there, is that people need to understand it's really important for people worldwide to eat nutritious food wherever it goes.
Jim, a personal question. I've watched you over the years as you sit in meetings and that you have to stand up. I mean, it's obvious your back hurt. In fact, I think I remember you bringing a small pillow to meetings for a while that you put behind your back while sitting. Your retirement as a lobbyist coincided with you getting an operation on your back. Are these two connected, and how is your back now?
No, they're not connected. We were in a position, actually, for the past 4 or so years to be able to retire from a financial standpoint, and just decided, look, you know, there's some other things we want to do, and so, you know, we moved in that direction. I held off getting the surgery because I knew it was going to be pretty major surgery until after I was done lobbying. And it was a good thing I did because, you know, the damage you cause yourself when you're doing deep squats, you know, of sets of 10 or repetitions of 10 at 500 pounds and get a little bit off balance, you can do yourself some pretty good damage. Even if you are, you know, 20 years old when you think you're basically bulletproof. So the bottom line is, the surgery is successful. It's been good. You know, I still got a lot of different work to fix various pieces of it, but I'm really happy I got it done. And I'm actually really happy I waited until after I stopped lobbying to do it, because it would have been a real pain to try and do the lobbying gig with the rehab that I've been having to do. So
wow.
All good.
Wonderful, wonderful. We'll miss you. But one last question. Based on your nearly 30 years involved in Washington politics and agriculture, tell me what you believe may be the three major issues Washington politics and agriculture clash over the next 30 years.
Same three they clashed on over the last 30. Water, pesticides, and labor. And labor is going to become increasingly less relevant because people are going to go to robotics. That's just the way it's going to go. So
then what's it going to be?
The environmental regulations are going to be a real burr in the saddle for Washington ag, especially in Western Washington, what little ag is here, left here.
Driving a tractor or combine is not as labor-intensive as picking apples or cherries in an orchard, but experimental robotic tractors that can change implements without human aid are already a thing. Like the conversion from horses to tractors, the transition to robots won't happen overnight, but it will happen. When I think of Jim Jesernik, I think of a man who defines grit. From his choice of an Olympic event, to his first several years as Director of Agriculture, to his later work as a lobbyist. The work required one kind of resolve, but smiling through the pain of a bad back, man, that requires another sort of grit. He will be missed. I hope you've enjoyed episode 199, or what I entitled, Jim Jesernik reminisces on a rewarding Washington career and assesses agriculture's uncertain future, too. Please join me here again next week for another episode of Weed All About It.
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.